Welcome to AI Snacks with Rom and Robbie, a podcast for technology muggles, not wizards. I'm Anastasia, and I'm joined in the studio by no one else but Matthias Roederer, who you've already heard on the episode number 12. So we discussed whether AI could write poetry, and on the episode 39, so we were discussing AI in music industry. And this is quite a premiere today because Matthias will be my co-host in a new series. We are planning to record 5 episodes around quite a hot topic. And why is it hot? Because I am always hearing the same questions from parents in my daughter's school, when I fly somewhere, during some conferences. Will AI actually kill the humanities in terms of skills? Are we doomed because we are heading into the valley of mediocrity? So everything is being done by AI. What is left for us humans? Or is AI a new savior? So we might even cut some edges and cut some corners and just leapfrog into something which we could not do before. We don't need maybe those 10,000 hours, those famous hours required to master a certain skill. So the opinions are all over the place. And Matthias and I, we decided to do a series on what is beyond human, what is AI in the age of human excellence, and what is human excellence in the age of nascent AI and robotics. So Matthias, welcome to our very first episode. I'm quite curious myself how it will go.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be here with you. And I'm excited to talk about, I think, which is, you know, one of the biggest problems and topics that we have right now.
Yeah, you will absolutely get our take. And actually, so just to kind of, you know, warm up, I'm tremendously grateful to Matthias for many things. And among those, he introduced me to this fabulous read. And this is actually Daniel Levitin, who is a fabulous neuroscientist. And he writes about the impact of music on human brain. And he tries to understand the human obsession with music through the lens of neuroscience. And actually, there will be a lot of neuroscience in this series of podcasts, but let me come straight to it. So what is excellence? And obviously, what is human excellence? And even antique philosophers were busying themselves with this very question. And Aristotle, he was writing that human excellence, so arete, that was the term, is not just a skill, but this is a moral virtues, the mean between excess and deficiency. And it is developed through habits and rational choice. And he believed that excellence is an activity of a soul, of a human soul, where it's not an accident, but it's always a result of the highest intentions, sincere effort, and intelligent execution. So there's very much of thinking and insights involved into this definition. So this is nothing which is like, let's say, a miracle which descended upon us from some gods. In modern times, so we might, recall Elon Musk and claim it might have descended on us from Mars. And then another philosopher, Socrates, he was talking about human excellence as something that is achieved by using one's potential to its fullest and living in accordance to one's highest values. Very philosophical, but at the same time, quite inspirational. So living life to its fullest potential. So Matthias, I would love to kick off and just ask you, what is excellence for you personally? And you are a trained musician, you are in AI since maybe not quite its inception, but since the 90s.
Yeah. Well, let's say early 2000s. Well, it's difficult to follow Aristotle and Socrates, so I'll do my best. I take a view on excellence, which is based more on I'd say personal effort and also wide curiosity and interests. So for me, excellence is something that is a result of two things, basically. One is focus on one topic, continuous focus on one topic to the exclusion of everything else. Really, this kind of mentality of getting to the bottom of something and working really hard and continuously on a problem. That's one thing. And the other thing, which is equally important, I think, is the exact opposite, is this letting go and being very open to the world and the experiences around you and learning from many, many different inputs. And this kind of combination of being very narrow at times and then again very wide at other times, I think that can lead to excellence in whatever it is you're doing. But I do believe very strongly that there is a lot of effort in becoming excellent, and it's hard work. And that's that would be my spin on the topic.
Well, I really love it. And frankly, I was giving a course on AI literacy, and I was really looking quite seriously into the distinctions between how mammals, not just humans, but in general mammals learn, and how machine learns, putting this kind of, together and uncovering what is different in AIs comparing to brains. And this is simply not in human, I would say, physiology and neurology that we acquire a certain skill, just, let's say, like an accident, yeah? It always works. So dopamine, which is not a pleasure hormone, it's a learning hormone, it can't be there all the time. And we are actually getting dopamine release in anticipation of something. And this anticipation is like a prelude, like an overture to acquisition of a certain skill, training of the skill and learning. So it is a process. It's laborious. It's not a miracle. But at the same time, so you are speaking about openness. And so there's someone who's a physicist and Nobel Prize awardee, Richard Feynman. And I absolutely love his work. I love how he writes. He writes in a very clear, simple language, and he discusses the most complex topics in a way that, let's say, even school children, obviously advanced school children, but still teenagers can understand. And he was using dozens of open questions to make his contributions to science. And he was considered a very important thinker. And he once said in an interview, you have to keep a dozen of your favorite problems constantly present in your mind. And mostly those problems will lie in a dormant state. And every time you hear or you read something, then you test those already present hypotheses against this new thing. And out of sudden, this new input might help. And you hit something, and then people are just applauding and saying, how did he do it? He must be a genius. So I think he decoded what is constantly there in human mind if we really are in this alert state, thinking about multiple issues simultaneously. And now we live in an age of abundance of information, with AI lurking around every corner. So how do you think about the state of mind where we are busying ourselves with problem solving in the age of digital abundance and the omnipresent AI?
Yeah, that's a really fascinating question. Just to go back to what Feynman said, I think this is really interesting for two reasons. One is to constantly have a list of unsolved problems that you want to solve. That already requires some kind of discipline and rigor that is often very hard to do in everyday life, and something that we can learn from him, obviously. And in fact, you know, even being capable of defining a problem very concisely and precisely is not so easy. And that's something that in most cases you don't learn really in school or even at university. It's something that you're supposed to be picking up on the way, but there's no rigorous study of defining a problem. That's quite interesting in itself. So you have that list of problems that you carry around with yourself, which is quite difficult to do. And then secondly, it's this combination of other topics related to your problems and this interdisciplinary team in a way. But this idea that insight comes, an aha moment comes from combining two fields which are on the surface not related. I think this is a very important observation, and that's something that in the field of creativity research has been proven over and over again that that is the case. And here again, I ask myself, what is the consequence for our educational systems now that we know this? And how should we be learning differently, perhaps? For our time and age and the abundance of media and input, as you say, that poses, of course, very big problems, because we're constantly drawn away from doing this cognitive work and doing these difficult cognitive tasks. And so I think one of the biggest strategies and findings also in research literature on creativity and AI recently showed that if you use AI to simply replace tasks or give you answers to tasks and so on, your cognitive load is very low, and there's actually almost no training for your own brain. Whereas if you use the AI to challenge you on certain aspects, it's going to increase your creativity a lot. And so the answer really to your question, in my opinion, is we need to become experts in being that focused person that focuses on one thing to the exclusion of everything else. And we need to learn how to really switch off inputs when we don't need them, and then to find the right kind of stimuli to make these connections between the fields and then by chance solve one of these problems, as Feynman puts it. So that's actually something that requires a lot of skill, I believe, and self-discipline. And that's not necessarily something that we learn in school or in university education.
Yeah. So look, you know, we are both parents, and you have daughters, two daughters, I have one daughter, and we are constantly thinking how to give them the best start in life. And actually, when I observe friends of my daughter and her, so I'm not quite worried, because kind of, you know, my daughter is heavily enjoying music, and she's involved in piano play since the age of three. She does not belong to this anxiety generations in terms of being constantly on and, you know, constant TikTok or whatever. So she understands digital detox, because she simply does not have time to look at her phone all the time. She's busy with something else. And I'm just wondering, so I think that this requirement, which is for parents and not just for schools, to train kids to focus and to train them discipline from their very early age and to master a certain skill, whatever it might be. So sometimes you ride a horse, and sometimes you jump, I don't know, salto and do gymnastics. So one of your girls is obviously a very skilled ice skater. Whatever it is, it requires discipline and mastery of the skill. And then some digital input comes on top, but you still can switch off and be without. When you are constantly like drugged by the omnipresence of digital, maybe this is you know, a moment where teachers and parents must pay attention. I'm wondering, Matthias, just, you know, by side question, are phones allowed in the school of your daughters?
They have a rule that the phone is not allowed during lessons, but in breaks they can use the phone. I'm very lucky that somehow my daughter has picked up some good habits and is actually trying to interact with her friends person to person. But of course, the kids today, they use social media quite a lot, and also to have meaningful social interactions. So, you know, it's often not a question of are they using the phone or not, but also how are they using it. And I think it's the same with AI chatbots like ChatGPT and so on. You can use it to great personal effect and gain, but you could also use it to harm yourself. And I think it's this kind of awareness of using the technology in a beneficial way for yourself that is something that takes time and that is not easy, especially because these systems are often very well crafted in such a way that they become addictive. Like, you know, I'm sure you also have seen this when you chat with ChatGPT and others, Claude and so on. They constantly give you affirmation and say like, oh yeah, that's a great idea, you're doing this wonderfully. And that gives a lot of people a kick, including myself. I like to hear a compliment. So, you know, one thing I did was I created prompts, system prompts, and, you know, prompts that you put into the settings of these tools to tell the tool to be critical and to always find different ways of doing something and suggesting me alternatives. And that can be very helpful and effective, but you have to know these tricks and tips in order to do it yourself, I guess.
And by the way, we will dedicate a full episode on the tools, which, let's say, would enhance human excellence and human creativity, Matthias. So I think we need to give our audience some practical insights on just how to be better. You know, two things which come to my mind now that you are talking. So I must say, I can't care less about a machine giving me compliments, but this is maybe because I started in AI in 1989. And I know, so this is just very difficult for me. I think that AI right now is a kind of a religion for so many people. And sometimes I just think like, look, in religion, so you have those different churches or, you know, the ways to believe. And in AI, we have OpenAI and Microsoft and, you know, Apple and whatever. So those churches, then you have those highest priests. In terms of Sam Altman and his cousins, even if they hate each other, they're still there. And then you have obviously the worshippers who might not even understand what is going on. So in the medieval Europe, people did not know how to read. So they were giving those fantastic pictures, you know, on the walls of churches to understand what the whole Latin, you know, service was about. And now, obviously, people don't understand all the mathematics behind ChatGPT, but they're somehow smitten by the whole magic. It's talking to you. For me, it's just, I know it does not talk to me. I know when I prompt, I just push some vectors in the semantical space, full stop. And for this reason, whether it will compliment me or not, I can't really care less. But... So, but it's just, and you know, part of my motivation to launch this AI literacy podcast and to do what I do in life is just to demystify, you know, certain things. And you know, there are people among us who actually say, "Look, okay, it makes mistakes. It hallucinates. People hallucinate. They make mistakes." You know, it's kind of, it compliments me as something. It's probably not very skilled in doing so. But, you know, this partner of mine is not more skilled than this machine. So I don't really distinguish. So for me, I'm fine. So I'm not fine. But look, I have a history with AI. And, you know, for many people, it's just another friend. Yeah. But it's kind of, you know, when is it useful? And we have cases where AI really enables a skill of human excellence. We have the whole Biennale of this year going on in Venice as we sit here and discuss. And this is an architectural Biennale, so our Biennale is next year. And in this architectural Biennale, the motif is intelligence, natural, artificial, collective. So this is the whole theme of intelligences in plural, so combining so the artificial intelligence and obviously the human intelligence. And I mean, the exhibition is marvelous. You can learn tons about how architects apply AI in their work and in their art and in this, their skill. And then on another hand, we have fields like medicine, emergency services, military. There, AI, a great AI requires a lot of trust. Yeah. And sometimes there are some situations where AI can do a lot of harm. And there is a borderline. Where do we believe it's doing more harm, or where do we believe it's, let's say, just a positive enhancer of something what we try to accomplish as human beings? And I remember last week there was an article by a partner from an investment banking firm, and she was speaking about AI on Wall Street. So she was with Goldman Sachs. And this lady said the real risk of AI is over-reliance on it. Obviously, AI is being used in trading since, I don't know, 2006, 2005, maybe even earlier. So they are great wins. They are some scary stories when AI whipped out billions of US dollars over one morning of trading. But he's a partner, a skilled partner who learned before all of us knew that there is such a thing as ChatGPT. And she's saying over-reliance, this is the real risk. Not that it will configure some data points in a manner that will be less beneficial for her trading. So how do you think about this phenomenon, and where do you think, oh, there are some branches which would then flourish if humans would use AI more?
Well, I think this is something that I've been thinking about a lot. And I'd say like my interaction with AI over the years, generative AI, has always been guided by this principle of pushing the model to provide me answers that are not from sort of the statistical mean and from what is most prevalent in the training data set, but rather to go to the edges of what the model has learned. Why do I say that? Because let's say my field, music. If you train an AI, an artificial neural network with a transformer architecture on a corpus of music, let's say from 1750 to 1830, which is what we did for our Beethoven AI example, you get an AI that creates music which is pleasant and which is following basically conventions, and it is something that is correct and good and surprising maybe in cases, but it's not something that really knocks you out of your shoes. You know, it's because it's really giving you the most expected continuation that it can find in the training data set. Yes, you can play around with temperature settings and so on, but this does only so much. And so to really get interesting artistic results, you have to tweak the model to give you answers which come from the periphery of the training data set and maybe combine that with other parts of the periphery. And this kind of approach then yields interesting results. We won't get into great detail here on how you can do that. That's for the other episode. But the general approach, I think, should be this. In order for the AI to really challenge our thinking and to really give us some kind of reflection on what it is that we are trying to do ourselves. This obviously doesn't apply to when you want to write an email to your local mayor complaining about the parking policies in your city, because then you just want the job done, and that's fine too. But I think most users have to still learn the difference between these modes of engaging with a model like this. And I think that this is one of the great challenges in interacting with AI. And there is no real answer which is definite, because all of these models and tools are evolving. And so have your strategies that deal with the results you get. So it's a complex situation, I would say.
And, you know, I'm just really asking myself, how can we judge upon human preparedness to really work with AI? And it's not just like, okay, so I know how to code in Python, right? It's not about it, but just this cognitive sophistication, which will help you to protect your human core and enhance it with help of AI, learn new skill with help of AI, but still remain deeply human. And I was truly researching this. I was looking at a bunch of frameworks, yeah? And there isn't anything which was really, I would say, excellent. And this is, you know, what our theme for this podcast series is about, excellence. So obviously there is this digital citizenship and internet maturity framework. It's covers reputation, online safety, adaptability in digital spaces, but it's not really about this preparedness of a human mind to embrace AI. And then, of course, you know, my own butter and bread in my business of AI literacy. So there is this OECD framework, there is the World Economic Forum framework with competences, list of competences across disciplines, which might require engagement with AI, but nothing about when do we believe that human is prepared to really benefit and to see through, let's say, some bullshit and some hallucinations. So how do you think about a framework to address preparedness of humans to deal with AIs? And you might not have the full answer now.
No, this is part of the fun of doing this series with you, is that I'm also learning a lot and expanding my view on the topic. And I think what plays a role is what you cited with Richard Feynman earlier on, is this ability to be clear about what it is that your goal is, and then also to be able to actually critically reflect on the information you get from the AI in relation to your goals and problems. And I think there are a couple of things there that need to be present in a human when they interact with these systems. And one is clarity of thought, of course, to varying degrees. I mean, there's no absolute point where one can say, now you have a clarity of thought. This is a moving target, but you should strive for a clarity of thought. The second is the ability to really judge based on a scientific method, maybe, you know, some kind of dialectic approach to making a judgment about what is true or could be true versus what is a wrong answer, a false answer, and so on. And then secondly, the ability to quickly work with that and digest that and then iterate again. I think these elements need to be there. They are rather, I'd say, general, but that would be the core of the framework that I see at the moment. And then there are various tools and processes to get to that, but that would probably be too detailed now to go into it. But those three, I think, are essential. What do you think about it?
I mean, frankly, I will probably give an answer which will be disliked by many, many people. Because, you know, our human nature and simply how our brain is working, it really demands those 10,000 hours. Yeah. I think
so. 10,000 hours of practicing, and then you master an instrument and whatever it is.
For example, yeah. And I mean, this is just the baseline. And then I think you can achieve marvels with AI. And I think we need to be very realistic that certain skills will leave the humanity forever, like maybe, you know, orientation, navigation. I mean, yes, we rely on those devices to get to from A to whatever in a new city. We don't read maps any longer, so we listen to the friendly voice in your car, yeah? So maybe AI will reduce a certain spectrum of human capabilities, but then open something on another spectrum range, right? But I just believe to really benefit, you need to be firm in your skill set as a human and constantly be on a journey to improve. So this, when you have this intrinsic motivation, then you are safe from AI overdose. And when you love learning, which is, by the way, a talent and a skill on its own. And Plutarch noticed that the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be kindled. So I would prefer AI to be this another fire to benefit human mind to go on some new quest, yeah? And obviously, we will discuss this when we are looking into tools, yeah? And I guess we might have a separate discussion on prompting. So a lot of people are asking me, so how can I be better in prompting, yeah? And there's a ton of research that prompting is a field which is not stable in AI products. This is how those things are constructed. So we must really, let's say, put emphasis on we are not dealing with, let's say, a violin or a piano or even, you know, a ball to kick in a soccer field.
You know, the 10,000-hour rule also applies to interacting with AIs in a way. So of course you can go very deep. You can read the release documents of new models and learn about, you know, the system prompts and everything. And a company like Anthropic is publishing all of that publicly. You can easily read all of that stuff, and it's highly interesting, and you learn a lot. So you can become a master in prompting and interacting with AIs. But I do agree with what you said earlier, and it's you have to put in the time. Also, I think one other element, and that's also a very, say, a traditional approach, is it is I think very important to really understand your domain of knowledge, and that's, by the way, one of the things that I believe we will see more and more in AI systems as well, that they actually use knowledge graphs more to guide them in finding the right answers for certain problems and topics. And so being an experienced human with a very deep knowledge graph yourself is, I think, a great starting point to interact with AI systems.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, this is a kind of a keyword to closing this first episode of our series, right? So we will look into how AI can enable humans to formulate problems. And I quote Pablo Picasso like more or less once a week when I give talks. So Pablo Picasso believed, I mean, that machines were very stupid. They just answered questions. Yeah. So the question now is whether more advanced AIs can help us to formulate problems. And Matthias, let's just tell our listeners what we are going to do in this series. And it might be a moving target because so our mind is not set completely on something, but we just thought, okay, so we'll start with 5 episodes, yeah? And we will first look into how creators use AI tools to accomplish excellence. Yeah. And what are those tools? So Matthias will talk from his experience of using such tools in his domain of knowledge in music. But we will look into science. We will maybe discuss the Nobel Prizes of the past year. I think it was highly symbolic for the world to award, to witness the new awardees who came from the field of AI. Then we will dedicate an episode to creators. And here I'm really keen to learn from you, Matthias. Obviously, you know so much about arts. Who is using AI and who is really doing some absolutely magnificent things which blow our minds. And of course, French are saying les goûts ne discutent pas, so we can't discuss really taste. But still, we can admire something which is just really fantastically executed. And then the fourth episode might be probably the most interesting of all of those conversations, because we will really look into how AI can help to define problems. Yeah. And then in our final, the fifth episode, we will discuss the future. And obviously, you might notice that both of us, we are quite optimistic about the future, though I consider myself personally as an AI realist, and I wish that there would be more funding for alternative architectures. Let's maybe discuss this as well and call upon, you know, donors, philanthropists, so those big companies won't invest into alternative architectures, because obviously their cash flow depends from scaling up deep learning and transform architectures which are powering today's AIs, yeah? So let's discuss this. And Matthias, maybe you would like to add something to close this episode.
I think what I'm really curious about to learn is how the fields of AI, technology, art, science, and the business world, how they come together in pushing the boundaries for us humans also. Is there a way for us to learn to go beyond where we are as humans right now by learning from technology, learning from science and art, and maybe combining them all? This is something that I find fascinating in a way that's sort of the new Goethe, Faust 1 and 2, and maybe there's part 3 now, and we can be part of that. But I'm really looking forward to this journey, and perhaps, you know, we can also learn from others, and there might be other guests on the show at some point who maybe even don't share our great enthusiasm. You say you're a realist. I'm more like an optimist and someone who tries to see the positive sides a lot. And it would be great to have other voices as well. And I think we're all going to see that. And yeah, I'm really excited to do this with you, Anastasia.
Fantastic. And to the listeners, I'm inviting you to check out the notes to this podcast episode, because you can contact Matthias on several social media platforms, and you can follow up on his work. Matthias has created a new company, Mindshift, and he's really helping even small businesses to achieve excellence in AI and to really separate, let's say, the noise from what might be really supportive. And I'm closing this episode with a appeal. Please go on Amazon or on my book website, www.romyandrobby.ai, and please order a copy of Romy, Robby and the Secrets of Sleep. And this is not about insomnia. This is actually about very sophisticated algorithms improving the capabilities of neural networks. Thank you so much for listening, and welcome to all our new listeners. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.